So, there's a very famous medrash that Rashi quotes parts of. It doesn't really agree with. He rejects it, and then he ends up saying, "Okay, but Torah can be interpreted many different ways." Quotes the famous Gemara in Shabbos, like a hammer that breaks the rock into 70 pieces. And it's about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Yaakov, you're looking at me like you need me.
What?
You're looking at me.
No, just I was looking here.
Okay. So, and the Medrash goes that a Kodesh Baruch Hu misses the Avos. I spoke about this yesterday. Kodesh Baruch Hu longs for their faith. Chaval al di avdin v'lo mishtachin. Because unlike you, Moshe Rabbeinu, they went through hell and high water, and they still remain loyal to me because they went through so many challenges to their faith. But you, the second that things get hot, and the second that Paro scorns you, lam hariyosa, you start complaining and doubting. I miss those avos. So it's a very strange medrash. It's also a bit of a non sequitur because the whole flow of the parsha is that Moshe has more of a gilui shechina. We talked about this yesterday than the avos. He has yud kei vavkei. The avos had shakai. So it's a bit of a short circuit of the entire flow of the psukim. But it's an interesting medrash. What I want to quote is the part of the medrash that Rashi quotes. In the medrash, Hashem misses the avos because they were so loyal to me, even when things became very confusing. What became confusing for Avram? Well, it's obvious. What was his nisayon? The Akedah. Kodesh Baruch Hu informed him, Kibi Yitzchak Yitzchak Yitzchak, and a few years later, sacrifice Yitzchak. What was difficult for Avram? Conceivably, stone. What was difficult for Yitzchak? Presumably, Akedah itself. What was difficult for Yaakov? You don't need to answer that question. His whole life was uncertain and challenging. But Rashi quotes a particular aspect that was difficult for the Avos to understand, and still, despite the challenge, despite how perplexing it was, because this is the ultimate riddle, they still remained loyal. Okay, what's this part that the Avos remained loyal to? Let me just find the place here. I'm sorry. I just have to find the Rashi. Yeah, here it is. What is Hashem missing? Because what was Avram's big challenge? Parshas Chayisara, when he wanted to bury Sarah. And he had to purchase the land. Oh my goodness. That is so baffling. And what was Yitzchak's major challenge? The Be'eras Hamayim with Avimelech and told us. And astounding, what was Yaakov's biggest challenge? Rashi doesn't even say what the challenge was. In Parshas Vayishlach, he buys some land. Vayikin Yitzchakas Asad Lintas Ola. These are the major theological challenges that the Avos face and pass with flying colors that ultimately score them higher than Moshe on the theology power rankings. You know, oh, Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, they were so loyal to me that they even purchased land for Sarah and they even negotiated with Avimelech. The answer is, and it's a very important because it stems from the pasuk, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he misses the Avos, Ve'era l'Avram l'Yitzchak v'Yaakov v'Kel Shakai, says, V'gam ha'kimosi, as we see them, let's say Islam is Eretz Canaan. Jews face two types of theological challenges. One is the classic Eof type challenge, perceived divine injustice, human suffering, struggle in life, misunderstood or non-understood divine expectations, the Akedah. And those are the classic ones. But then there's another aspect, and that's, why can't we just live in Israel? This is Hashem's land. Why is it so hard for Avram to purchase a burial plot for his wife? It's a humanitarian cause. Everyone lets others bury their dead. It's 4x4. Why is it so difficult for Yitzchak to dig some wells for water? He's not trying to conquer anyone or subdue anyone. He's not running an apartheid state. He just wants some water. Why is it so difficult for Yaakov? All he wants to do is buy land and be a good neighbor. And Chazal Zayin Vayishlach, he starts to build malls and shopping centers, and all of a sudden Shechem erupts and there's a whole war. And why is that? I understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways are unknown to man. So when Hashem speaks to me, I understand that I can't fathom it and I have to submit my own logic and my own intellect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations. But when it comes to just living in my home, everyone lives in a home. Everyone has a house. You just purchase a house, you build a home, furbish it, and you live there. You don't expect it to be contested that hotly. And that's part of the challenge of living through Jewish history, is not just the fate of Jews and the challenge that Jews have faced, and especially coming back to Eretz Yisrael. This is just our home. We just want to be home. And all those three psukim talk about Jews purchasing land. They all were legally purchased lands. Avram purchased Eretz Machpelah, Bekesef Malay, Yaakov, Vayikin, Yitzchak as Asada. Yitzchak is a farmer. These are not about Jews conquering in war, conquering lands. These are just simply land purchases, and even our land purchases are challenged. And the others still maintain their commitment to Eretz Yisrael, even through all those challenges and uncertainties about living in Eretz Yisrael, which should be a gimme, which should be an obvious. Theological challenges I understand, but just living in our home that's been promised us that we purchased legally, but that's Jewish history, that not just our presence in this world is contested and sometimes hated, but it becomes even more intense when we just want to live in our land that's legally ours. And Hashem says, and they were so committed to me, and you should use that as your template for your own loyalties. It's a very interesting Rashi. Remember, it stems from the Pesukim. Now, after Moshe is dispatched and is worried about the Jewish people, all of a sudden there's a list of genealogy. Ela Rashi Beis Avosam, B'nai Ruvain, B'chor Yisrael, B'nai Shimon. It's a partial list because we really only want to get to Moshe and Aaron because they're the central figures. They're the leading actors. We need to know their genealogy. So Rashi highlights, Mitoch Shehuskak Liyache Sheva Shelevi, Mishra Moshe V'Aaron. We talked about Moshe and Aaron. Once we talk about Moshe and Aaron, we have to present their genealogy. Once we present their genealogy, then we have to start with Ruvain. Basically, Rashi is saying everything's backwards here. The way the parsha should be written is you introduce someone by reading the resume. Following person will speak. This is his name or her name. This is where they live, their children. These are the papers they've published. This is who they... You give a resume, you introduce someone, and then you hear what they have to say, and then they interact with you. Everything's backwards. First, Moshe is dispatched, Aaron is dispatched. Oh, by the way, we need to know, since we need to know where Moshe and Aaron come from, it's like in the middle of a speech, by the way, did I tell you the resume, where he comes from? Forgot about all that. The answer is obvious, that we don't want, remember, Moshe and Aaron are not just leaders of this redemption, they're also going to be the future leaders of a separate tribe of Levi that's going to have a special role, that's going to have a authoritative role. And how do you manage a situation of authority without it becoming separatism and tyranny and abuse of people? How do you maintain people of authority as servants and subservient rather than abusers of authority or people that luxuriate in the authority they have? So presenting Moshe and Aaron on stage would have fueled the sense of aristocracy and nobility, and they're superior, and they've got, here's Moshe and Aaron, this is where they come from. Now they were dispatched from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So everything is inverted. Moshe and Aaron are just people, without any background, without any yichus, we don't know who their parents were. HaKadosh Baruch Hu selects them. By the way, we need to know more or less who we're referring to. But even that, let's just put it into context of an entire people. And we don't need the entire list because that would weigh down Parshas Vayera. We already had the Shvatim and Parshas Shmos. But there's an inversion here, and the textual inversion is meant to subvert the possible establishment of a separate noble aristocracy that's superior or better than. And that's why, according to Chazal, Sheva Levi weren't really working. That's what gave Aaron and Moshe the liberty and the latitude to always be spaziering into Paro's palace and talking to Paro. So why doesn't the Torah record that? It's one of the major, major issues of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that there was a Shevet that was relieved of work duty that could foment the rebellion, foment the redemption. We don't see that. And Hashem doesn't want us to see that, because that would create a special status to Sheva Levi that could then germinate into nobility and aristocracy and arrogance. If you're a leader, means you devote your life and your resources to others. Not that you take favors from people, you use their money, or sometimes you're allocated public funds, but you have to be careful about how you use those funds. Sometimes you have to take positions of representation, but that's not lead. It's a very dangerous word today. The word leadership is thrown around, money good, in very, very dangerous terms, and people wedding leadership to social media creates a very toxic mix of what people expect leaders to be, attention grabbers. So here you've got leaders, but they're submerged within the text and almost invisible by textual restructuring. Okay, just one more quick Rashi. Before Hashem dispatches Moshe for his final go, now you're on your own, Moshe, not you're on your own, but now you're going to challenge Pyro again. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron vayitzaveim el b'nei Yisrael ve'el Paro melech Mitzrayim l'tzias b'nei Yisrael mi'etz Mitzrayim. After Hashem had already delivered the content, the four terminologies, Moshe concerned, the echi shmeni Paro, Hashem says, go back. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe. It's a pasuk that stands out. It's its own parsha. One pasuk parsha. starts with a Parsha Pei, Parsha Psucha, and ends with a Parsha Stuma. So what is this? Hashem already commanded him, already instructed him, delivered the content of that instruction. Moshe has certain concerns and hesitations, and he decided to go. So why is Hashem reissuing? So some want to say Hashem is just saying, by the way, I know you're concerned, the Jewish people won't listen, but just go. And this is like a summarizing pasuk to launch the process. But Rashi says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided two messages for Moshe that he hadn't provided before, and I want to discuss one of them. Before, he told him about the redemption, about the Avos, and Moshe had concerns about the Bnei Yisrael. Now Hashem's saying, now let's talk about style, not content. I've given you the content of your message. Geula, Tzeisi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Vilakachti, Paro. But now two style points. Number one, those Jews are not easy to deal with. They're stiff-necked, they're complainers, they're insurrectionists. To be a little bit forbearing, to be a little bit generous with your spirit. Vayitzaveim el b'nei Yisrael. El means about, not to, but Rashi says al b'nei Yisrael. Rashi's language is, Siva leim lanhigim b'nachas v'lisbalosam. They're going to irritate you. They're going to annoy you, I promise you. And it's going to start before in Mitzrayim. Just have patience, tolerance, let it glance, Teflon, let it glance off your body. Okay, what about Paro? What is this command about Paro, the style? It's not the content. It's not about content, what you should tell them, but how you should go about the process. What's the style point regarding Paro? Sivam alav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Moshe and Aaron, lach lach lo kavod b'divrahim. Whoa! Be careful to honor Paro. Honor Paro? Excuse me, Moshe says. Is this the same Paro that I read? Honor Paro? Are you kidding me? He's a genocidal murderer. He's Hitler. Honor Paro? He slips babies into the Nile. So there really are two points here. They're related, but one is micro, one is macro. Micro is, yes. Derech Eretz Kadma L'Torah. Derech Eretz doesn't mean midos. Derech Eretz means we follow the conventions of man. Very important. People sometimes conflate Derech Eretz with midos. Midos is anivos, zrizos, zahiros. Derech Eretz means that when human beings create decorum and conventions and ways that they interact with one another, then even though it's out just human beings, it's all transient, it's all Olam Hazeh, we're part of Olam Haba, no. Part of being an Oved Hashem is you live in this world and you adhere to politeness and you adhere to common manners and common decency. It's not about midos. It's called Derech Eretz, the way of the world. And the way of the world is to show honor and respect to symbols of authority. Jews are always institutionalists. Jews always respect authority, even sometimes when that authority has to be overcome and rebelled against. We are institutionalists. One of the, I think, lasting messages of Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital is, ironically, when we got back to Israel and now these institutions of the government became our institutions, it was very hard for some people to still look at their government as their government during the Oslo years and during the years of withdrawal. Not my government, not my police, not my army, because they're disagreeing. That's terrible. It's our army, it's our police, it's our government, we're institutionalists. Part of democracy is you don't always get your way. Part of democracy is you have to make compromises. Part of democracy is sometimes you lose the vote. But to cross that line where it's not my police, you've heard this during Amona and during Aza, and we remember we're old enough, right? It's not, that's dangerous messianically, it's also completely antithetical. The irony is, oh, the Polish government, then we can support the Italian government, and we live in Italy and Poland, and but now that we're living in Israel, it's not chalila v'chatz. It's so ironic. The larger issue is that Hashem's telling Moshe not just about Derech Eretz and respecting the symbols of government, but in addition, this geula, as much as it's trying to restructure the political situation and redeem the Jewish people, it's going to flow through politics. You're going to have to go to Paro and exhibit diplomacy and honor him, not just morally, as if you're living in Italy or Spain or Russia, you have to show respect to the local organs and instruments of government. But this is a geula, and you think, oh, this is a geula. It's meant to topple this decrepit, tyrannical, abusive system. And when I topple it, I come from above and I just crush it. I don't have to work through diplomacy. I don't have to work through. So someone says, no. You think geula is supernatural? It is. But sometimes it's encased in natural dynamics and historical flow. And that's why Moshe is constantly back. Why all the makos? Who cares about Paro? The larger question of Aaron Bo. It's much ado about nothing. So he can snap his fingers and we're out. Yamsuf. Hashem can split the yam. So I'm just saying, you're leaving. Turn the Egyptians into idols. Do the load thing. They should slow. They all turn to idols of soul. We just waltz out. Why the melodrama? Why do we care about Paro's heart? And it is more stiff, and it's less stiff. We have to break his will and not break his will. We have to ask his permission and rally support. Who cares? Hashem tells Moshe, this is Geula, and it's going to flow through human events and human decisions and political events. It's going to flow through Chavtep and Ovem. It's going to flow through Balfour Declaration. It's going to flow through United Nations. As much as you'd want it to be transcending history and separate from history and hovering above history, that's not how I choose to deliver Geula. So that means when you go to Paro, make believe you like him. Go through the process of diplomacy. Show him on. We don't really like this person. Not a likable person. He's going to end up drowning in the Yamsuf. But you have to work through politics. You have to work through human events. It's not just a message about how Jews behave in theory. It's a message about Geula as well. So three different Rashis. Rashi number one, about the challenge of Eretz Yisrael, how baffling it is. Of all the theological challenges we face, sometimes it's the down-to-earth challenges, just trying to live in our land that's legally ours. That's the most valuable. Why are they so hostile? How could this happen? I mean, we have a contract. We've lived in this land for thousands of years. Every archaeological dig discovers more history, and yet people deny our presence, deny our history here. Number two is the inverted yichus of Moshe and Aaron. It's not presented. We don't read their resumes. They're not called up on stage. First go work. By the way, you need to know who they are. Check their profile. Check their Facebook profile. Here they are. Just clicking to find where they come from, where they went to school. Third of all is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Moshe to honor Paro, A, because Jews always honor organs of government, because without that, the world would be slipping into anarchy and chaos. So we respect not the people necessarily. You have to respect the person, right? I always had this question. If Trump were to walk into the room, I don't have respect for him as a person. I respect his policies, but respect the institution, respect the government. And people far worse, though, history Jews were forced to respect. But specifically, it's the Geula of Mitzrayim that has to flow through political channels, not superior, not above history, within history. Okay?